This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to a Market Talk Lunar New Year special. Ahead of this new year, the year of the Wood Dragon, we'll be asking what possible Chinese stimulus measures will be enough to kickstart growth. We'll be wondering if the performance of China's stock market is mirroring the lost decade of that of Japan's. And in our usual roundup, we'll be mulling over US GDP Q4 numbers announced last week and looking ahead to this week and some key central bank messages, mainly those from the US Federal Reserve and the Bank of England. So hosting the call from the UK is me, Frances Watson, and with broom at the ready and waiting to sweep in the new year, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are your preparations coming along?
Yeah, I'm still a bit of a newbie. I've been here just over 3 years. Is this my fourth? I think this must be my fourth Lunar New Year. So as far as I can tell, people queue up for hours to get new banknotes and then give it to each other in licey packets. And the queues can be absolutely horrendous. But as I say, as a newbie, I don't have to use the new ones. I can sort of use the old ones and pretend I didn't know that you needed new ones.
Yeah, well, very deftly answered, because of course you've avoided the question of brooming and sweeping and cleaning, and that's to expunge the bad spirits, right? So everything is nice and shiny, and I think someone told me that.
Sounds sensible. Yeah. I'll take your word for it.
So look, from dragons and animals to animal spirits then, and China's financial markets. I mean, moves have been afoot already this year, haven't they, to try and stabilise financial markets, but more importantly, to kickstart growth, because the indices have been disappointing again. And we saw from central bank authorities that quite a large cut in the reserve requirement ratio and other measures. Maybe talk us through some of those measures. Are they enough, Ben? That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to say that it's been disappointing is an understatement. I mean, just looking at the Hang Seng as an example, so far this year, we're talking on the 31st of January, it's almost 1 month into the year. So up until the end of the 30th of January, the Hang Seng is down just about 8% in a month. I mean, that's pretty horrendous. And that's on the back of, you know, over 10% losses last year. So, you know, it's not exactly coming from a high point either. And that compared to the S&P 500, which is up 3% and a bit, the Euro stocks up 3% and a bit as well. So the big, big underperformance, again, by you know, Chinese equity markets. Yeah, so Premier Li, there was a state council meeting a couple of weeks ago, and he came out and said we need to do something more forceful to help stabilize markets. I mean, the economy, markets, the PBOC, the Central Bank of China, then, as you say, to cut the reserve requirement rate, which is basically the amount of money banks have to stick at the central bank, cut that, which freed up nearly a percent of GDP of liquidity, which then can be lent on. Also did other things, cut other interest rates across the system, announced various things to try and prop up the stock market, making it harder to short equities, asking state-owned enterprises to focus more on profitability. That was another part of the government. So lots of things there. But frankly, all of this is focusing on the symptoms rather than what's actually going on in the economy. And what's going on in the economy, we've spoken about for ages, is there's a focus on trying to stop the investments or trying to limit the huge amounts of investment that we've had over the years in the property sector and infrastructure. So it's trying to shift that focus away from that sector and into a more value-added sector, you know, high-tech manufacturing, service sector, trying to improve consumption. And that whole process is very destabilizing because the property sector is huge and the infrastructure part of the local government is huge. So if you start squeezing that, the other bits you're trying to grow just do not offset the negative. And you're seeing volatility across many markets. Of course, we've seen it in the bond markets and corporate bond markets. We've seen it in equity markets. And so trying to prop up the equity markets isn't the same thing as trying to unwind what they've been doing. And look, I don't think they want to unwind. I think they're very much on this course. They want to change the economy, improve the economy in their mind structurally, but it's going to lead to a lot of volatility. And you can try and sort out those symptoms, but it's not going to fully reverse what has been the case for a couple of years now.
And if, as you say, this sort of structural shift, as I understand it, from old to new industries is on the agenda, and that could take years. And you've written quite extensively about the parallels that you've drawn, that you've drawn between China and Japan. And of course, Japan had that huge debt overhang, didn't it? And resulted in the lost decade of investing. Is that where you think we could be going for China?
I mean, yeah, if you look at the Hang Seng, for example, it peaked 6 years ago in 2018, and it's down over 50% since then. So that's 6 years. That's over half a decade worth of weak returns. I mean, of course, I don't want to overplay the similarities, the debt overhang, the huge amounts of investment in Japan is quite similar to China, but there's huge amounts of differences as well. It's just, I guess my point is that so far the markets have been reacting like they were in Japan in terms of the Hang Seng, onshore equity markets as well. Take the government bond yields, you know, they've been falling too. So, yeah, it does look as a... And I was... You picked up on a research report I was writing. You were asking exactly when the lost decade was. And it was actually 19 years. I think that the Nikkei peaked in 1989, the end of 1989, and it troughed in 2008, around about, of course, the Lehman Brothers going bust, which wasn't anything to do with Japan.
So nearly two decades.
That was the trough. Yeah, it was nearly two lost decades. The lost decade is making it sound too positive.
I do remember sitting in an office, gosh, that dates me, as an assistant to a big fund manager who was running Japanese money. And we got a call from a broker in 89, whenever it was, saying, buy Japan because it's going through the roof. And I don't think we ever saw that number again. But anyway, look, let's go from China to the US then. And a little bit brighter story there, because we had some strong Q4 numbers, didn't we? 3.3% annualized, I think, amid signs of slowing inflation. Now, that is the perfect combination, isn't it? Is that sustainable, do you think?
It's been a really good last 12 months for the US economy. And I think, you know, a lot of investors are declaring victory for the Fed in this soft landing camp. I mean, as you say, that sort of growth of that level plus falling inflation, we've seen just the latest PCE inflation as well declining, is all very positive. Actually, that growth, 3.3% annualized, as you say, that is too strong. We got on Friday, we can talk about it a bit later as well, but we've got some labor market data all this week, Friday, important data in the labor market. The labor market is still pretty tight. For now, it looks great because you're getting stronger than expected growth, certainly stronger than I expected, we expected. And yet inflation continues to fall, which could allow the Fed to cut interest rates in the coming months, which is what's been propelling this rally across US equity markets, I guess Western equity markets, for the last couple of 3 months now, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, and of course, that's in stark contrast to Europe, isn't it? Because we've had German GDP figures shrinking in Q4, which is presumably why there's pressure on Madame Lagarde and the ECB to ease in the spring. And that seems to be, is that priced in already to markets, do you think?
Yeah, I think people are starting to expect. It is funny, just spend 2 minutes just thinking about what's been going on here. So as you say, Germany is, I guess, contracting a little bit, stagnating in the best possible way. European GDP has been zero for the last couple of quarters, no growth at all. And yet European markets are also pretty strong. I mentioned before, the Euro stocks up 3% this year on the back of a really good 2023. And I think that's been driven by the US positive story. The US is so dominant globally that it picks up. I think if the US had been stagnating like Europe had economically, if it hadn't been growing at 3%, if it had actually been flat, I think the market would have been, investors would have been an awful lot more worried. And the big reason why I think the US has outperformed Europe is the fiscal side. So the US government last year increased the deficit massively, sort of 6-7%. In Europe, Germany, for example, has been forced, and we've spoken about it over the last few months, forced to actually decrease the deficit by the Constitutional Court. So I think that is the swing. It's the US fiscal. And we were worried at the beginning of this year that the US would have to tighten the fiscal belt because, well, it was just ridiculous last year. But it looks as though going through government in the US now, that they're going to be able to do even more. There's a spending bill that's being agreed by Democrats and Republicans. Very surprising in an election year that they're actually coming to some agreement, but it does look as though they are. And that could even, we thought the fiscal side would drag on US GDP this year. But now our economists think that it's going to be a small boost, could even be up to a percentage boost if it was at the top end of expectations. So again, this year looks, you know, pretty okay for the US, quite strong for the US growth. And it's lifting up the issues that we've got elsewhere in Europe. Not enough, unfortunately, to lift up the Chinese stock markets. But yeah, elsewhere, it does seem to be lifting a lot of boats.
But as a fixed income investor, and, you know, with all this debt in the system, I mean, should you be worried? Should we as a house be worried, longer term picture, really, about this huge US fiscal deficit that we've got going on?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, yeah, long term. That's tricky to invest for the long term. You never know when that's going to start. But even if we focus on the short term, so we have our multi-asset team have added some risk as we've increased our optimism about the US economy. We've decided we've now haven't got a recession as a base case. We have increased. We're still underweight risk generally. We have increased. The one thing, one quite realistic downside possibility risk that would lead us to sell, I guess, again, would be if we were to see interest rates start to materially increase from where they are today, based potentially on people worrying again about inflation starting to accelerate. Because if you keep spending money like there's nobody business and the unemployment rate is really, really low, then there is a risk that you start to see inflation go up. If we see inflation start to creep up, then interest rates could go up. And we could see a repeat of what we saw in the middle of last year, summer, when there was that higher for longer, that squeeze on other asset classes. So, yeah, that's funnily enough, the biggest risk right now is maybe not a recession. It's if we get a reignition of the higher for longer, the too strong economy. That would probably be the thing I'm looking at for most.
Yeah, interesting. Now, talking about strong, we had some strong numbers, of course, from the tech companies, which have been filling our inboxes with their numbers this week. Any thoughts generally about the Magnificent Seven?
So broadly, it is another incredible sort of statistic around the Magnificent Seven about how important they are for global markets and certainly for the US market. I mean, there's a really good blog, actually. The Elgin blog, there's one by Ewan Bowerbank and Robert White about the Magnificent Seven. Go and have a look at that. I've stolen a couple of data points from it. They wrote it on the 22nd of January this year. But just in broad terms, the earnings growth of the Magnificent Seven in 2023 at that stage, so last year, was coming in at about 31% earnings growth. The rest of the S&P, so I guess that's the S&P 493, is that my maths? That was looking at an earnings decline by nearly 6%. So the Magnificent Seven was everything in the US. And even looking at 2024, at the time, the expectation for the Magnificent Seven's earnings growth is over 18% in 2024. And the rest of the S&P is more like 8.5%. So, yeah, it's so important. And, of course, they have been dominating returns, they're dominating the size of it. I've seen some really good charts just stripping out the performance of those seven names. And if you do, then the S&P 500 looks a lot like every other equity market last year, which is pretty good, but nothing special. If you take those seven names and if they were Chinese names, if they were in the Hang Seng, for example, the Hang Seng would be doing perfectly well. Thank you very much. I guess there's a reason why they're US names, aren't they? So that they were born and developed in the US, but they are so, so important. And as you say, this week, lots of earnings come out. We've already had a couple mixed, actually. You said they were pretty good. There's been some mixed reactions so far, but we've got a few more. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see how they all come out.
Yeah, as you say, the euphoria for now is trending, but at what point does that bubble burst? Oh, crumbs, better not talk about dot-com bubbles. anyway, moving swiftly on, we've got some central bank heavy announcements this week. We've got the US Fed today, actually, Wednesday at the time of recording, followed by the Bank of England on Thursday. What should we be looking for there, Ben, with both of those?
Well, maybe the European Central Bank from last week is most pertinent to this. So Christine Lagarde spoke about, well, she didn't rule out a rate cut in the April meeting when asked directly. And that was seen by investors as saying that she was happy with how markets were being priced, even though other ECB speakers were pushing back on that previously and since and talking more about a June rate cut. But, you know, that meeting was seen as dovish because of that, you know, not, as I say, not pushing back. So everyone will be looking at the Fed and the Bank of England about whether or not they'll push back about current pricing. Most central bankers are being a little bit less aggressive than investors are in terms of rate cuts. They're talking about rate cuts later in the year and fewer, which I think if that did take place, that would be a bit of a disappointment for equity investors because, you know, wouldn't be quite so positive rates backdrop. But if they come out and start easing their rhetoric and actually being a little bit more in line with what's priced into markets, more rate cuts, earlier rate cuts, then again, that could lead to an even bigger pop in equities. So it's really important to see what they say. I don't think they'll be making any rate moves this time around. It's about what they talk about in the next few months, how they're going to try and manage expectations. So we'll see what Jay Powell says tonight.
And then the Bank of England, I mean, we have had in the UK here, we have had some pretty impressive numbers in the sense that inflation is easing. But the governor there still seems to be sort of holding out, say, hold your horses, nothing to see here until June at the earliest.
Is that
true?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And that's been the case. That's exactly what the European Central Bank was faced with. But the same as in Europe, the UK economy is not particularly strong right now. I mean, nominal returns, nominal sales have been fine, but that is because of inflation. Inflation is still above target. So I can see why Lagarde and I can see why the Bank of England maybe would talk about earlier rate cuts because they're probably a little bit worried that growth is slowing. But at the same time, they've got inflation that's coming down, but it's above target. And, you know, it could start to swing back up again. Everyone is rubbish at forecasting inflation. So you've got to realize that you can get those forecasts wrong and they could be higher than expected. So I think they're going to tread this careful ground, trying not to disappoint investors too much by pushing back on early rate cuts, but also trying to sound as though they've still got inflation as a goal to get it down and they don't want to be too positive. So it's a tricky balancing act. Maybe Christine Lagarde was a little bit too dovish last week. Maybe the Bank of England are on the side of being too hawkish. But that's the tricky ground. That's the tricky tightrope that they're all treading.
All right. Well, look, talking of forecasts, we've got the US jobs report this Friday. What are we forecasting there? Can you just remind us of what we should be looking at?
Yeah, so the numbers recently have been coming in sort of 100, 150,000 jobs a month. That's the sort of number that would be expected by most people. One interesting trend that I've definitely noticed over the last few months is they've revised down previous months. I mean, it's amazing that we all focus on this number as if it's incredibly important every month. And then actually the final number that gets released in many months' times after numerous revisions is totally different to the one we get. So things could be a lot worse or a lot better than what this number does come out at. But if it's about 100, a little bit over 100, I think that would be fine with everyone. As long as the unemployment rate doesn't go up too much, that's the other factor here, because if it starts to creep higher, then I think the Fed would be a little bit worried that it might not stop going up. So it's a sort of flattish, maybe a slight increase in unemployment rate, jobs creation between 100 and 150,000. I think that would be perfect. Anything outside that, much stronger or much weaker, I think would be a small negative for markets.
Okay. All right. This being our Lunar New Year special, we'd like a number for you, please, for the actual year of the Wood Dragon. So what's your number, Ben, and why have you chosen it?
Yeah, well, so I mean, maybe it's not for the whole. Yeah, it is linked. It is definitely linked. So it's a Chinese number, and it's something actually that's also important for the year of the dragon. So it is -2.08, and that's -2.08 million people. That was the population decline in China last year, which of course this is another thing that authorities would ideally like to reverse, because we talk a lot about GDP and growth and economic, and one factor that drives economic growth is the number of people in your economy. I mean, you can be more productive, but if the number of people are shrinking, then your economy is going to, that would weigh down the economy. And the key for China is the number of births. I mean, I guess deaths are something that is pretty much written in stone. And last year they had just over 9 million births. Now, I know that a lot of people are looking at the year the dragon as a particularly auspicious year to have a child, you know, so this is the key. Maybe Year the Dragon, we can get a few more births, get more than that 9 million and get the population to reverse course in 1 year. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of a pop in the number of children in next year.
Are there any incentives that the government issues? I mean, do you get like a toy dragon for you, sometimes, I don't know, that's been things in the past that governments have encouraged, haven't they, with, I think, transistor radios, I want to say, is that right?
I don't think they do transistor radios anymore, actually, Francis, but
is it all DAB digital?
That's even worse than your 1989 comment earlier. But they are definitely encouraging people in terms of monetarily. The one child policy is gone. So they are trying to do it. But I think the encouragement is actually just purely because of the dragon, the year of the dragon. It's seen as something good. I'm a year of the horse person, which is probably the reason why I'm going to Cheltenham in March to do some gambling. But year of the dragon is much better than year of the horse, apparently. So that's what everyone wants to be.
I knew you'd get your racing in somehow. Anyway, Ben, that's really interesting. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Happy New Year, because when it does come, have a good one, celebrate well. Good luck in Cheltenham. We'll talk about that nearer the time, I know. But for now, Ben, thanks for your thoughts. And thank you all for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.